the shuttle presentation, we could be adding. Who knows? Out of the shuttle presentation, we could be adding. We shall then have to listen to more of Sasa. Thank you, sir. Oh, madam. Who is leading?
We'll lead the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity. My apologies to the members on that side. I'm actually sitting in front of the projector so they can't see me. But firstly, let me just thank the committee for providing SACPL the opportunity to present today. I think we have some value to add to the discussion. Moreover, we appreciate the opportunity provided to us. Before I commence, I'd first just like to apologize in that I didn't bring any popcorn, but moreover, I don't have the sound effects, so I don't feel so bad, so I'm not too concerned about that. Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, let me please introduce my team. On my far right, I've got Masego Siyane, who is part of my team. I've got Martin Ginster on my immediate right. Martin Ginster is the head of water sanitation biodiversity at SACPL. He's in fact the expert on water matters within SACPL. And on my left, I have Heiko Alka, who is our parliamentary liaison. My name is Johan Taser. I'm responsible for regulatory and stakeholder affairs for the SACPL group. We are very honored to be here today. I think in terms of the presentation, Honorable Chair, the way we would like to... I'll continue. In terms of the presentation itself, and maybe getting to the slides, the way that we would like to run the presentation today is really around three topics. The first one is SACPL today. The second, SACPL's approach to water management. And thirdly, SACPL's water initiatives and opportunities going forward. The way we will present is that I will do a little bit of a tag team. Is that I'm only doing the introduction. I'm going to then allow and hand over to my colleague Masego and then to Martin to take you into the detail of our presentation. I think very importantly, what we will share with you today are a number of initiatives that we have underway within SACPL. The one thing I need to make you aware of is that our initiatives that we have so far undertaken within the group does not necessarily speak to the topic at hand, and that is, of course, theft and vandalism. But we have done, as far as we're concerned, quite good work in regard to water conservation. And we believe there are a number of important lessons that we've learned that can be applied within the area of theft and vandalism of infrastructure. More importantly, I think what we would like to show, what SACPL has achieved, not through its own, but because of the fact that we have worked collaboratively with the communities, with the provincial governments, with local governments, because we believe this is not something that we can do on our own. There are some things we can do on our own, and Martin will speak to that. That is specifically that when you start talking about water conservation and water measure of management, you look at those things that are firstly within your control. And that is where we look at initiatives that we can employ within our boundary fences. But at some point or the other, you need to walk outside of those boundary fences. And while we will touch on initiatives inside of our boundary fence, we will spend most of our time at some of the initiatives that we've undertaken outside of that fence. I think very importantly, as Salga has pointed out, as far as we are concerned, and we agree with Salga in that regard, is that collaboration is probably key. because that is where we are going to find the common purpose for making sure that we can combat this particular problem that we have with regard to theft and vandalism. Now, I think I will actually stop there and then hand over to my colleagues. So without any further hesitation, Honourable Chair, I will hand over to Masego Siyane, who will take us through the first part of our presentation.
Thanks, then, Honourable Members. Without much ado, my job really is to walk you through and give you a bit of context in terms of where we are as SAPO and effectively where we're headed. It's often we hear that with age comes wisdom, experience, and a wealth of knowledge. And it's fascinating to comprehend that SAPOL has actually been around for 67 years and counting. And we remain committed to South Africa and the investments within the country and the region as a whole. And with that said, as presented on the slide above, we're represented in 37 countries.
Sorry, did I hear you correct? You are saying you are 67 years of age.
67 years of age.
You are 67.
64.
You are 64.
64, pardon me.
Congratulations.
I think that's a little bit of a memory problem, being that age, your chief.
We can be considered senior citizens, 64 years. But be that as it may, we are represented. Be that as it may, we are represented in 37 countries. And for purposes of this discussion, I'd like to focus a bit more energy on the Southern Africa, the bottom tip of where we're really playing at in terms of our strategies and the regional integration projects that we really are passionate about, and the fact that, you know, South Africa is our base and we want to do a bit more work in that context. And once you start talking about the regional integration conversation, you cannot do it without government support, and the only way we've been able to do it at SACO is through a collaborative effort, as Johan has mentioned, through the partnership with the Mozambican government and the South African government, which has been very supportive in terms of our plans. Still on the Southern African and the Africa region context, I'd like to highlight the fact that here within South Africa, we have an exploration right just off the east coast of KZN. And we also have a technical cooperation right, which we have a JV with Petro SA, which is off the west coast of KZN. Next slide. Yes, 37 into the business. We're integrated in a lot of ways. And yes, we employ 33,000 people globally, but 28,000, which is the bulk of the number of employees that SAPOL currently employs. And I think at this point, it's probably important for me to hone a bit more on the nurture and growth strategy that SAPOL is currently putting forward. And what that means is there's going to be a bit more focus in terms of our regional presence and activities in South Africa and the region. And as I speak to that, you'll notice that on the side, we've highlighted the fact that South Africa spends a whole lot in terms of capital expenditure. For this financial year, well, the past financial year, we've managed to spend 59% of our total capex, and in equivalent to 19.8 billion in total. And I guess for me, this phase, we are here to stay. South Africa is where we're fully rooted, and there's a lot more to be done and to be explored. I guess at the risk of emphasizing our age, It's worth mentioning that we've come a long way. Our journey really started in 1950 with the concept of a CTL came into being, and we explored, and as a result, we've become champions of beneficiation, beneficiating coal and gas into liquid fuels, high-end chemicals, and chemicals. You'll notice in 2012, we commissioned the special gas engine power plant, which is taking the pressure of the grid. And as we speak, recently we launched the gas to power project in Mozambique, and it's work in progress, but we're really finding our way and trying to focus our energy more on the cleaner, less emissions energy resources, and to make sure that, you know, we contribute continuously to the imperatives that South Africa as a country is trying to achieve.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Heather, and Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I was really pleased when SASL agreed to come and put something together for these hearings, because it was about 2 years ago, in November of 2012, that we, in this very room, came and spoke to the committee around the National Water Resource Strategy and some ideas we had around that, and things have moved since then. So I'm introduced. I do deal with water at SASL, and I'm now on slide 8. If you want to follow either on the screen or on the handout, Honourable Chair, water is quite an interesting, not only interesting but challenging issue, and it's sometimes hard to put this water thing for SASL into some context. And I try and do that in this slide, which we broadly describe as our landscape. And there are three broad areas that are really important to us. And I start on the left-hand side, depicting with a little picture there the typical process that SASL operates. I even go into a little bit of chemistry just to show, particularly for our South African operations and elsewhere, the ability SASL has and worked on perfected over the years to convert synthesis gas of carbon monoxide and hydrogen to hydrocarbons and water. So one of the facts around water SASL is that we actually produce more water than we do products in these reactions. We also consume a significant amount of water too. In terms of the landscape, if you look at the left-hand side of the slide, we reflect on the importance of having or receiving water at a high assurance of supply. And this deals with the issue of access and security, which will be a large theme of this discussion. We require water to generate steam, make hydrogen, cool processes, those type of activities, and we need that at a very high assurance. Secondly, as I've already mentioned, we generate water. This water is of a poor quality that needs to be upgraded, and we've been quite good, have become good at treating water treatment and the need to include that in as part of who we are. So water is not something at the end of our process that we need to take care of. It's integral to what we are and how we operate. And for that, we clearly require robust and reliable processes. And then the third part of our landscape deals with the issues around the reality that we do impact on water resources, and these have to be responsibly managed. So in summary, it's about access and security of water and our drive to ensure that we receive a fair but also secure allocation of water, that we have and implement robust and reliable processes, and that we are in turn become responsible water stewardships. So water manifests itself in various ways: physical, regulatory, reputational, economic and social and environmental risks, and it is indeed a complex issue, but I do hope this provides some context or departure point for a discussion around Sasol and water. The next slide also tries to help dimension the way we respond to water, and we do this via adopting the framework that we endorsed some years ago for the United Nations Global Compact Key Water Mandate. I also would like to just quickly run you through the six key focus areas where Sasol has committed over time and where appropriate to respond to the water challenges. I'd like to draw attention to the box called Direct Operations at the sort of the 2 o'clock hand of the slide. It is probably the most self-evident that companies dealing with or using water will need to do it responsibly in their own direct operations. And we draw attention to all the work that we do in that field. And I have a slide that further emphasizes the point. Moving down to the second key focus area that helps companies define and manage their water resources is the issue around watershed and supply chain. As I'll show also as we look a little bit into the Vaal River system, that Sasol is also, like the whole of Gauteng, receiving water from as far afield as Lesotho, and that has some implications to how companies respond. Their risks are not just within the factory fence line. Collective action is also something I hope we'll emphasize sufficiently. While we'll be talking about the 3.5 to 4% of the yield that Sasol uses from the Vaal, we know that is still small relative to the other large users, namely urban and agricultural sector. And it is therefore incumbent on us to work collectively to bring about change that we believe is required on a system like the Vaal and elsewhere. Community engagement, I think, is also incredibly self-evident in that you cannot expect to get your own allocation if your communities are not also receiving water that they require. Public policy in the water space is interesting from a global agenda point of view. I think we have our interesting debates in South Africa too, which we'll continue to have, and I think there's a uniqueness around how companies need to engage in public policy. And then finally, transparency, as the last of the key of the six key focus areas, is also, I think, quite self-evident. In terms of a way of my simplest of definitions around water stewardship, it's about understanding or recognizing that you have an issue and dimensioning it in terms of risk. It's about responding to that risk. And then it's being about disclosing and being transparent and accountable with what you are doing. And I believe that's a fair definition of what water stewardship is all about. I'd like to just go to the next slide, that would be slide 10, where I just emphasize that Sasol is continuing to invest in water technology solutions to secure water access and manage these facility water risks. We have two facilities, particularly in South Africa, the one based in Secunda and in Sasolburg. And I just show from the top three slides, starting at the left, the mine water desalination investment that Sasol did at Secunda in the mid-90s to manage surface mine water, or help to manage that. We have a picture of a water supply pipeline, the recent investment of the VRESAP, or the Vaal River Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project, which connects the Vaal Dam up to the additional water requirements to Secunda, Secunda complex, as well as Eskom, and also the most recent, which is the Water Recovery Growth Project, a $1.3 billion capital investment at the Sasol Synfield operation Secunda, which is an anaerobic biodigester being used to treat surface effluents and reduce loads on an existing infrastructure. The bottom slides reflect just our investments, significant investments around membrane desalination to emphasize our focus on reuse and recycling. The last slide at the bottom is a representation of an anaerobic membrane bioreactor joint venture
development between GE and SASL, which we believe is something we can use in our further our GTL technology offerings. But I just think it's important before one goes into these discussions to emphasize that industries would need to and have to, we respond in such a way, get our own house in order, and there's a clear interest to make sure that happens. But we believe that is not enough. If we go to the next slide, and apologies, Honourable Chair, this is now a bit of a lesson in the wild system, but we think it's an important departure point to get our message across around the discussion around water security in the inland region of South Africa. It's going to be difficult to point specifically at where all the issues, how the Vaal River system works, but you could probably in the middle part of the graph of the picture towards your left is the and it's indicated such as the Vaal Dam, which is a good place to picture or anchor a discussion around the Vaal River system. The point we're trying to make is that the Vaal River is made up of a number of interconnecting storage dams and transfer systems. The Vaal Dam is supported by the water coming in from Lesotho through the Lesotho Highlands water project. There's also the additional supplement which is possible via the Tugela system. We have the entire eastern subsystem also providing water in. It's just a representation of the how interconnected and plumbed the inland region of South Africa is, which shows where the two SASL facilities are located in relation to the water supplies. And also, I hope it also emphasizes that one of the key drivers of the Vaal system is the water demand for Gauteng for both mostly urban and industrial users. I hope it's self-explanatory in terms of at least putting SASL into context to the Vaal, because the next slide I'm going to even do less justice to, except to point out the state of play. And this is a representation of the probability of the region, the Vaal River, running out of water, or there being a serious violation of the water planning model that is predicting water availability at different assurances of supply. So there are actually three graphs stacked up. There are certain water users that are allocated, or water is planned for their allocation at a 95% assurance, some at 99%, and others at 99.5%. And anything red is essentially bad news, because there is a probability of the system failing and not being able to achieve the provisioning of water for those assurances. Now let's emphasize, now we are currently water secure. We do emphasize that the water balance, the system is out of balance, meaning that the demand from the Vaal is exceeding its sustainable supply capability. We've had good rain, but the pressure on the system cannot be underemphasized. And I think though SASL's water and all users essentially are secure, I think a prolonged period of drought would put the entire system in at extreme risk. I think that's the important message I want to bring across. And if I could move to the next slide and emphasize by example one of the specific issues we really wanted to bring to this committee today, Honourable Chair, is around a fence line or beyond the fence line water conservation partnership. And I will be brief on this. We believe, and I hope it's been pointed out, that the Vaal system is complex, is at risk, and I will show, and this is to me the highlight of the most important slide is the pie graph there, which shows a perspective on how we've been looking at the issue. And we have concluded, and I just need to describe the top 4% in the black there represents approximately the water in the Vaal River system that is allocated to SASL. At the bottom, the green bit is the 17%, is the one that we've been eyeing as an engineering company interested in pipes and pumps to relieve and reflect the domestic losses in the Vaal River system. So we could be looking at that 4% and be pushed and continue to be pushed, and we understand the need to be pushed to reduce or improve on our water use efficiency, and there are as much we are doing in that area, but we also present that we are somewhat inherently constrained by the technologies that were designed in the 60s and built in the 70s to reduce substantially our water demand for our existing assets. And therefore, we've concluded that going beyond the fence line is something we think is appropriate for our response to dealing with catchment security on the Vaal. So while we're looking at the 4%, we believe there's much more we could do in the area of urban losses in domestic infrastructure. And I'll show an example of what that looks like. Now, before I show that, I do want to pause here and just say, look, Sasol has a wide portfolio of water-related projects, and we didn't want to come here with a long washing list of what Sasol does. I just do summarize it in one slide. We're having a whole lot of in-house water research and technology development. There's an interesting memorandum of understanding with the Water Research Commission. We are also hopefully to be seen as active members of the South African Water Partnership Network that have been engaging with the Department of Water and Sanitation on certain issues. We are very active in the field of reporting and disclosure, which we believe is very important in the water space. There are various corporate social responsibility programs. We have initiatives with the South African Irrigation Institute and so on. I really feel we don't want to emphasize too many issues. Let us, if we allow us, Honourable Chair, just to go to one project in the space of one slide with a few pictures to follow. This initiative is the Polokometi Sasol GIZ Mfuleni partnership, which I summarize what that is all about in the slide that follows on slide 15. Now, as I pointed out, we feel there's only so much we can drive water security by looking at our own operations. And it is through this collaborative partnership that Sasol initially funded with GIZ, the German, I would describe the implementation of the development funding. There they provide a lot of they implement a lot of development funding from the German government. Quite active in South Africa, they're very active in the water space. And in this, we just show very simply the benefit of water conservation in urban water supply systems in houses, where over a period of 27 months, we were able to achieve a measured audited saving of about 6.8 million cubic meters of water. In this, essentially 106,000 houses and 94 schools were visited. We replaced 9,500 taps and a staggering 242,000 washers. This created local employment opportunities. The next point really is important, that it provided, and half of the funding actually went into water conservation, education and awareness campaigns, which were held in the community. We would single this out as one of the highlights of this project, and in turn, the municipality provided some ring-fence funding to supplement the seed funding. The concept is quite simple. If the Mfuleni municipality can save water on the bulk, which they are receiving from Rand Water, then if you can ring-fence, and that was the agreement, a portion of that would be reinvested in this project. The next slide just shows you what you can achieve by... it's difficult to see on the slide. Those were just some pictures that show the benefits, the simple things that can be achieved. It's not so simple. That's quite a big pipe that then has been ruptured there, and the slides that follow. But if we move to the slide of the graph, it just shows you, next one, what can be achieved by replacing 9,500 taps and 242,000 washers. And including in that a whole lot of education awareness. And this is really where we believe, if I move to the last slide, try and just emphasize again that while we, as Johan Chase has mentioned, my colleague, we're not here to directly address the issue of vandalism and theft, but we believe by example of this case study where we were able to quite successfully go into an area where the losses, and I haven't mentioned that, are in order of about 50% of what municipalities buying in from the bulk utility around water. They are not getting any revenue from more than half of that is actually being lost in aging and I would call it derelict infrastructure. And we believe this is where we could do quite a lot more. So we conclude that beyond fence line, water conservation partnerships can save water in meaningful amounts. And I think it should be part of our solution as a responsible water stewardship company. The initiatives, as I've mentioned, to combat vandalism and theft of infrastructure could use potentially these successes that we have realized in our water conservation initiatives. But we also look to learning from others because we don't believe this is a perfect system that we've created. But we do believe it lies in building collaborative partnerships with communities, gives momentum to awareness campaigns to highlight the need to protect water. And I think that's something we haven't heard much of today. I think maybe there we have something we could offer. And lastly, what we believe to drive this, and this is what we presented 2 years ago to the National Water Resource Strategy, is some mechanism to incentivize private sector in engagement in these places. We were delighted at the time when we presented that this whole idea of offsetting policy being introduced into the National Water Resource Strategy 2, which actually was, we were successful in, and we do see it there now. We want to thank the department for taking on that and the former committee to provide that steer and guidance. But we really think it's got to need some incentive in order to upscale and replicate these type of partnerships to a scale that really matters. So we believe we have some lessons that could be applied elsewhere that we would like to share. And with that, Honourable Chair, I want to end my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Quite an elaborate, obviously. You are honest in saying you did not come here for what we have come here for. In other words, you have your own mission while you're here. And you must still tell us as to why you're here. Not now. We heard earlier on a combination of both the saga and also having elicited all the challenges, difficulties, problems, and combined with the solution. Now we have business, if you like, capital, to be combined with labor to the mix. Where is labor? There you go. So among us in that parliament, it brings those synergies between labor and capital. There was a problem and there was a solution. Capital is coming. Labor is coming. And then we shall have a combined Q&A. And you'll be so shocked that capital and labor shall be having the same concern. You'll be so shocked. It has happened. That's generally how society is, and nature, of course. Those contradictions at times, they go different directions and they converge at times. And my correct, do they converge? We have seen it in action. Business. And the action here was toll gate, where labor and capital are speaking one language. Fascinating. Of course, for different reasons. You shall increase. I guess you are all by yourself. You are all by yourself? Members, you must have received a number of other submissions. Those were written submissions. Unfortunately, there are no people present to submit those or present those. So those are for us in our own reading as we go forward in this, in touching this very important subject matter.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks for receiving us and to the committee for giving us the space, Chair. I must confess you did slightly catch me off guard about the convergence between business and labour. But we're always welcome if business adopts our positions. We seek to convert everybody, so hopefully that's a positive step, Chair. Yeah, of course, our thing around e-tolling was around our position around privatization, but that's another debate. But yeah, no, thanks, Chair. Look, so I hope I'm getting the acoustics right. There's quite a lot of echo here. But my name is Matthew, my surname is Parks. I'm from COSATU's parliamentary office. So I think we wanted to work to thank the Chair and the committee for giving us the space to make our two cents of thought around this issue. I think, Chair, also when we saw the advert, and as the advert indicated, there's no policy on the table yet. There's no bill, for example, dealing with this critical issue. So our understanding of the committee's intention was to open a discussion, and quite a useful discussion around what you saw as the causes to this national crisis, if one can put it that way, vandalism and a theft of water infrastructure. But of course, Chair, you're saying about finding solutions. My apologies, Chair, that we don't have a detailed academic submission with lots of research and statistics and so on. But I thought we would just try to assist the committee with fleshing out a few of our understanding of the causes and possible solutions to look at for the committee when the committee develops the report. So we hope we are helpful to the committee, Chair. And I think, Chair, the committee is right to raise this issue because, you know, broadly, Chair, we can find a toy nowadays in South Africa down a freshly paved road paid for by the municipality to a new community hall paid for by the municipality, and people will be complaining about service delivery. Yet at times we forget that there has been significant amounts of service delivery. But having said that, Chair, of course, one can't rest on one's laurels of the past. We must constantly find ways to improve the conditions of the country. I think, Chair, for me, for COSATU, the critical objectives on this issue was, well, besides broadly welcoming and supporting initiatives, was to support the committee's ideas about finding the necessary interventions to capacitate government, as well as, of course, Chair, ensuring the constitutional rights to all South Africans of the right to water, to clean water. And I think, Chair, we view this discussion as maybe a first step towards finding solutions to assist governments in dealing with these issues. I think, Chair, without being repetitive, of course, you've seen how water is a major service delivery from protests in Ermelo and Mpumalanga to the recent crisis in Gauteng. There's even other ones which wouldn't capture the media headlines. A year ago, Kimberley went without water for about a week. So there's a frequent service delivery challenge facing all of us. I think, Chair, if one just kind of tries to flesh out for us what some of the key causes, because of course we must look at the causes before you find the solutions. And without kind of repeating an old mantra, but I think it's right to say that the main cause is that centuries of neglect from apartheid and colonial, 350 years worth of neglect. And of course, it's obvious, but the neglect specifically at townships, in rural areas, and so on. I think, Chair, I think we've also can point to the lessons from ESCOM, that at times after democracy in 94, provinces, national, municipalities especially, haven't always invested sufficiently to deal with the population growth, or the need to invest and upgrade and maintain infrastructure, etc. I think, Chair, we'd also want to point out our concerns around some municipalities' privatization of water services. I think, if you remember, Chair, in 95, 96, when there was an issue in Nelspruit, where water services were privatized. And of course, we'd be very much against that. We don't think you can mix profit with the basic constitutional human rights. I think, Chair, the issue of a 35% unemployment is obviously a ticking time bomb which spills over to all of our social economic delivery challenges. Of course, the challenge of a jobless economic growth rate. I think, Chair, the issue of the illegal trade in copper, in cables, in other infrastructure that you can sell, you can steal taps, you can steal pipes, cables, and you can go and sell it at your local scrapyard. In terms of the police, I think we must commend government for having increased the numbers of the police services massively since 94. But of course, that doesn't solve the whole solution. It's also the solution of capacitating those members of the police service in terms of training, equipment, etc. I think, Chair, also, without being too critical, but I think there's also a growing sense of alienation among society in general, from unemployed youth to the public at large. And one can kind of see that in the voter turnout. You know, it's a good thing that in the last elections we had about, I think, a 75% voter turnout. But still at the same time we had about 15 million potentially eligible South Africans of voting age who either didn't register or registered but didn't turn out. And the point I'm trying to make is that there is a bit of a growing gap between government, between public reps, between the public at large. And it's always important to try to find ways to minimize those gaps. And I think that can also come down to the issue of a sense of public ownership around infrastructure and government plans. Chair, there was an article in one of the papers last week, I figured which one, about a school in Govanimbeki Township in PE. It was a new school built up in 94, a very good school. But because for population numbers, the school is being closed, not being utilized, and then people were coming to strip the school during broad daylight. And in the end, the community also joined in the stripping because they thought, well, rather us strip it than somebody from outside the township stripping it. I think the point here is that you need to have a sense of community ownership around government infrastructure. Otherwise, government's good efforts can just go to naught. Chair, in trying to help the committee to look at possible solutions, and obviously there's no one solution fix all, but maybe a variety of issues to look at. I think the one issue is what the committee had mentioned, Chair, about having a national integrated water plan, which also links up to the issue of energy, of course. I think as government is making every effort to do so, to upgrade and to expand existing infrastructure. The issue of the sense of community ownership of government infrastructure, the issue of ending privatization. I think, Chair, we also support the issue of increasing the allocation of subsidized water to the poor, and of course, then increasing the tariffs on affluent or high users. Addressing the gap between governments, public reps, and communities. Of course, it's not an easy thing, it's easier said than done, but one has to be creative. The issue of service delivery backlogs, adequate security provisions. I think here, Chase, maybe one could even look at the experience of Kaohsiung, where I think because cable theft has become so bad there, they just come to deploying security guards every kilometre or few kilometres along the cable route. Those kind of creative ideas, capacitating our police. Chair, you mentioned earlier that business has raised their own personal interests. We'd also like to smuggle in one of our interests. The government has got an expanded public works and community works programs, and obviously there are good intentions there about creating immediate job relief, income relief to the very poor. And why I'm mentioning it, Chair, is that at times many municipalities are so financially stretched, they're not able to cover all their targets, the mandate. And one of the things they often do is, instead of employing permanent workers, they allocate normal municipal functions to these community works or public works programs. So issues of cleaning the streets, fixing the roads, maintaining the roads, stuff which has always been a municipality's responsibility. We often feel it's now allocated to community works programs, and they essentially become a form of cheap labor. Why I'm raising here is just in the sense of trying to alleviate the sense of community alienation. If a community can see that its residents are working in an infrastructure project, hopefully they'll feel a sense of ownership that they are benefiting in multiple ways. I think, Chair, the perennial issues of corruption, wasteful, and under expenditure especially. I think, Chair, we've been raising this question for a while, that if there is a looming water crisis, from infrastructure to delivery, and we really want to plead and to urge that we avoid the massive tariff hikes that we've seen with Eskom over the years, where tariff hikes were on average 25%, you know, triple inflation levels. We know the government has committed itself to setting out a national water tariff, which we hope would help to ensure equity and affordability for the poor. I think lastly, Chair, on two issues. In fact, maybe, Chair, I can also mention one of your colleagues from the DA, if I can say that, one of the members, Peter van Dalen. He used to be a councillor in Cape Town, and at that time, the city of Cape Town had done a fairly good idea, trying to tackle cable theft and copper theft. In fact, they set up a unit, I think what are the names, Copperheads or Cobra, something like that, but specifically to crack down on people stealing water taps, copper from the telephone lines and electricity lines. And I think they have done quite a good job. And one of the key things I think, Chair, which is useful from their experience, was they went to the scrapyards themselves. So you don't just go after the criminals, but you go after the buyers as well. And maybe that's something for government to look at. I think, Chair, also, maybe the issue of culture and respect for law and public ownership. You know, Chair, there's often this example mentioned about New York, that the New York police had a philosophy of a broken window. So you deal with the small issues before a criminal escalates into becoming a full-scale criminal. Or you look at the Singapore example, where they're very strict on very small things, like you mustn't put bubblegum on the train, you mustn't litter on the street, you mustn't spit. But you can see how over 30 years, Chair, they've changed the culture of Singaporeans to become very law-abiding. And if you walk in Singapore, you feel very safe, you won't find any graffiti. But when you come back to Cape Town, you find somebody urinating in the streets, and that same person later that day complained, ah, the government can't even keep the streets clean, you know? So I think the point, Chair, is about how to evolve culture into a progressive sense of culture. I think lastly, Chair, to conclude is that we really want to commend the committee for taking this initiative. As I said, the discussions, the ideas are right first step, and that should be welcomed. And I think, Chair, from our side, we would want to say that we're always available for the committee on this issue or any other issue that wants to engage. So yeah, Chair, hopefully you'll forgive me that I didn't come with detailed academic research, but one just had to have some, identify some solutions for the Chair, for the committee to look at. Thanks, Chair.
So those are the two presentations or the submission. As I've mentioned, the submission stations are numbered. If I'm not mistaken, they go on to 12. Now, these are your written instructions. And clearly, this is for our own grid. As the people who submitted this are not present. So it gets taken to be part of our literature as we go forward with these discussions. So thanks very much, sorry, I didn't get the name.
So, Matthew, and the surname is Parks.
Matthew Parks.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Obviously, the approaches are different. The one from business talks about making sure that it has access to water for its own business use. Kosatu's line of presentation talks more about public ownership of our public goods and making sure that the poor have access to water. I think that's the line I think to pursue. Members, those are the few presentations, and that then takes us to the end of any submissions. So we are at liberty to engage in discussion. I was very keen from Sasso's point of view on saving the losses and the model that they want to pursue. Whether is it to look into a participation that is a public participation with a local municipality, and where is benefit and where is loss in that equation, if there is any loss? Where does municipality benefit? Obviously, from a point of view of Sasso, they need more water for your operations. You can see water out there running, going nowhere. You want to tap on that for your own consumption in terms of business use. I'm very keen on the model you want to pursue. I also hear you talking about metering on some of those communities. It sounds quite an interesting one in that neighborhood where you are operating. Whether that is also going to be part of your CSRI, what do you call it? CSI? Corporate Social Investment Project or Program. What members are still making up their minds on the areas of input they might wish to. You know, there is this notion all the time being mentioned. South Africa is a scarce country. It's more like a broken record. You know, South Africa is a water scarce country. South Africa is a water scarce country. So on and so forth. But when we closely look into our dams and getting a sense of ownership of those dams, well, I ask the question all the time, who owns our water? And you are immediately going to be referred to the Water Act. You know, state owns the water, the minister, the custodian, and we know exactly what is going on. On one hand, we are told here in Sasol, it's quite an interesting analysis of what the Valdam water system is segmented. You know, 25% is domestic, 4% is Eskom, Sasol, 13% is Eskom, 41% is agriculture. Agriculture is always either the most beneficiary. To understand, going back to the tariff issue, I guess also it should be a matter that is thrown back at SASO. Maybe the department can also assist here in your thing. If you can just talk very briefly, we really would be very keen, I would imagine, on behalf of the committee here, about the tariff regime that exists in our country. Here you have the farmer, and you have the industrial operators in the form of SASO, and also you have your communities out there, your domestic people. What we do here all the time is that the poor communities in our country, they pay a lot. And those rich ones, they pay very little. Whether you also get involved in any futures market as the industry. Mr. Bosa?
If I understood you correctly, you buy raw water, so you don't buy clean water, you clean your water yourself. Just want to clarify that.
Okay, let's take those two in the meantime. Oh, sorry, Mama Mulan.
Thank you, Chair. I want to check with COSATU, is there any relationship between the National Integrated Water Plan you refer to and the National Water Resource Strategy? And how does water privatization not prevent vandalism or theft? And on SASO, what do you do with the water that you generate from your process of fuel making? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members, honourable chair. I think maybe just to start out, and the first question, if I just may go to the slides quickly, so that I actually bend over because it's once I've written. You'll recall that if you look at the slide that dealt with the second on the far right, so it says 800 million to be invested in community infrastructure. What we in fact have there, Honourable Chair, and this relates to the question about working together with communities or with provincial governments, we have actually concluded two MOUs with both the Free State government and the Mpumalanga government. And the drive of that particular MOUs are in fact driven to ensure the quality of lives and improve the quality of lives of people that live within the area. So it is driven to look at how we can in fact, one, replace, upgrade, maintain infrastructure that is key to ensuring this quality of life. Some of the things that we've done, and before I go there, is that this project or this program is in fact a four-year program. It is called SASO Ikusasa, and it's both in the Free State and Mpumalanga, and it's based on jointly with the provincial departments, the provincial governments, my apologies, to identify projects that are needed to uplift or to ensure the quality of life of the communities that we operate in. In terms of the particular question as to do we see a lose or a win in terms of this relationship? The way that we look at this is that it's a win-win because we need to ensure that the employees that work within the communities where we have facilities are in fact happy within the areas that they work. If they're not happy to work there, then they will not work for our facilities and they won't work for SASO. So it's a win-win for us. Yes, we provide money to be able to do the infrastructure upgrade. And as part of the infrastructure upgrades, we've already spent 187 million rand, which some of them do relate to water projects, but not to water projects solely. The one that Martin has specifically spoken to is a project that clearly for us exemplifies what can be achieved if you work together. And that is what we are, and that's why we're also here, is to show that we are the biggest corporate, almost the biggest corporate in South Africa. And because of that, we need to show some leadership as well. And that's why we are here. So in terms of the particular detailed questions relating to SA's water scarcity and whether we buy all our water. I'm going to allow Martin to answer that question because that is particular to his subject matter.
Thank you, Johan. Maybe to also thank, thank Kasata. I think a lot of those, all those recommendations resonate certainly with me. I think we, despite our difference, perhaps we very much in the water space should be really finding much more common ground. Firstly, with regard to...
And you are finding each other. Or you have found each other.
I'm suggesting, I'm surprised why we don't, we should be able to find each other much more closely in the water space.
Good. I guess you drink the same water.
Yes.
That's what you should bring the two of you together.
And to clarify the point, yes, you're correct to say SAFL is looking to secure its own needs, but I hope the point was trying to come through was, is that we can only do that by advancing the interests of the whole. I think that's the clear, that we cannot look at our own security without looking at the security of the entire system. And I think that's the message I hope I was trying to bring across. In terms of the model, and I think it is an interesting model, and we call it that, there's got to be something for everybody in taking on a partnership like this. And in simple terms, it can be looked at, and I think it shouldn't just be looked at from an economic point of view, but for the municipality, this is serious money they're losing. If you have 50% of the bulk that you're buying in this case from Rand Water, that is lost, you're not getting a revenue from it, either because you're not billing for the water that is used or because it is being lost. That's a big problem for the municipality. So if one is able to, at scale, fix enough leaking taps and toilets, that should run, the bottom line should be a reduced water bill to the municipality. And that is what this model is about. It is the municipality being able to ring fence a portion of these savings so that they can be reinvested into the initiative. And that was a very fundamental part of the agreement that was reached with Empeleni. Yes, for SAFL, it's about putting a bit of seed money in, but with the almost a missing link of getting some recognition in law for these investments. Otherwise, they just become CSR, corporate social, we prefer the word responsibility and not investment. So we worry that is where this could end up if we don't get something for it, because we are looking at a long-term security issue here. We can't be secure. I think for GLZ, it provides the... we hope, and a good investment of the development funds, and for the community too, if you're creating sufficient jobs, that there is a benefit to the community in this. So I hope the model is a bit clearer. It's about, there's got to be something in it for everybody. Quick response to the raw water question, yes, most of SAFL water for the SAFL Sinfield complex as well as the SAFLberg is raw water that is treated on site before it is used. But there is also water that is brought in as potable water through which is already being flocculated and treated. But the majority of the water that you use, the bulk of it is raw water. Yeah, straight from through a water abstraction agreement with the Department of Water and Sanitation. I hope that addresses the bulk of the question, unless I've seriously missed anything. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. Maybe if I may, Honourable Chair, the question that was raised around what do we do with this water we make? I think I didn't give enough clarity to that. Yes, we make water, but we need a lot of water to make that water in the case of the coal facilities that we run. That's the one point. So we can, and we are growing, if you are putting a new SAFL by the coast, for example, it could actually become a net water producer if you use treating water
and seawater is clean water, if I can be that extreme. But we are actually, it offsets a portion of our water needs. That water is upgraded. It contains a lot of short-chain fatty acids, which are very easily treated in a biological wastewater treatment work, and then it is recycled. So in the case of the large Sasol Synfuels complex, at any one time, up to a third of the water in that system is recycled water. So we reuse and recycle the water.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, the first question around the National Water Plan, National Water Strategy. I think, Chair, I'll continue. There was a support, what looked like a suggestion from the committee about having a national water plan and one that is integrated with an energy plan. I think first that made sense, Chair. But I think clearly as a country where we're not getting to grasp with the challenges of vandalism and theft. So obviously there's a need for new ideas. So that is our position and why we supported the committee's initiative. I think, Chair, the issue of privatization, look, obviously for ideological reasons we would always oppose privatization. But I think more so when it comes to a constitutional human right like water. I think that's why we oppose to it, especially when it comes to an issue like water. Chair, if you privatize water, you inevitably find that the companies will put in last of the queue, the poor, the rural, the most indigent, the most remote, because they'll make less profits from there. And then you'll find the rich, the suburbans, and even big capital will be the first in the queue and will benefit. Sorry to start off. But I think, Chair, even if you look at electricity, you'll find that the prices the big mines pay for electricity is subsidized by the state. And we understand the importance of creating jobs and so forth, but it's difficult to reconcile that, for example, Chair, with the poor in a squatter camp who are needing basic services and can't afford it. Chair, also I think if you engage in privatization, definitely a community won't feel any sense of ownership around such a good. And of course, Chair, while we've mentioned the issue of poverty and unemployment, because poverty and unemployment force people to do desperate things. And hence people will sell cables or sell copper taps, etc. And that will lead to, you know, theft and vandalism. I think, Chair, the last two issues I just wanted to smuggle in, if I could, Chair. I think you had mentioned the issue of water conservation. And I think Sasol mentioned the issue of water metering. I think, Chair, when Comrade Khada Asmo was our first Minister of Water Affairs, he really did a brilliant job in capturing the imagination, how to conserve water, look for new ways from alien vegetation to the rivers and so forth. And I think maybe we must go back to basics. We must go back to some of those good ideas that pioneered. Chair, when it comes to the issue of water metering, I think that's definitely an issue we have great concerns and oppose. And that we find at times people want to expand water metering to townships. And what happens is the family can't afford what is their need of water for the month. And then you put them into a situation where they are without water for half the month. Then of course there's health implications, there's sanitary implications. So I think there's a much better way, and that's why we raise the issue of increasing the subsidy of water for the poor and indigent. I think, Chair, the last issue which I wanted to raise is the issue of informal areas on private land. And we know municipalities will always say their hands are tied legally because it's private land, and obviously they can't go and build infrastructure on private property. But I think, Chair, like one thing to do is from national side, from the committee, is to pressurize those municipalities to use the expropriation powers they have. Because you find an owner, he owns a plot of land. He's immigrated to Australia 20 years ago, he's long forgotten about the plot of land. Or he's just simply neglecting it. But whatever the situation is, municipalities, provinces have the right to expropriate. There is provision for compensation on a fair basis. But surely we should prioritize people's access to water. And it's not just a question of an issue for rural areas in Eastern Cape, Chair, or Limpopo. One can go to Cape Town, right next to the airport where members fly on a weekly basis. You have two informal areas, Malawi Camp and Freedom Farm. Now, since 1994, we've not been able to deliver those basic services to those communities. Yet they're right next to a very expensive piece of government property. So why I'm highlighting that, Chair, that it's not just a question of Tala and Shanghai. Even your metropolitan areas are neglected. For example, in Cape Town, you've got about 200 informal settlements, almost all of which are on private properties. And those, that's why we have this issue of bucket toilets and so forth, Chair. So I think that's one issue which we definitely need to find creative and drastic solutions, Chair. Thanks very much.
See, I think although we've got cable theft is a major issue, that's why we are here, but I think the biggest problem that we have at the moment is the water losses in our systems. And I think that we should start to focus more on water losses. I disagree in the sense that we should look at privatization on water, whereby water boards could take over where municipalities cannot deliver those services, and concentrate more on curbing the water losses that they have in their systems. We know that the average in the country is about 36%, but there you will get some municipalities that their water losses is up to 75%. All that happens now is that they don't go and look for those water losses, and then they expand their water purification plants. That will just mean that more water will be lost. You can go and spend less money to save your 75%, or in this case, in your model, the 17%. It's going to cost you less than saving that 17% than adding a plant to get more water in the system. I think that is something that we need to take hands with big companies like you, where you put make money available, but maybe spend that money to make sure, as you have mentioned, that ring fencing it to solve the problems. And there's a lot of municipalities, as you've mentioned, they're just financially not in a position to do it. I can give an example in Citrusdal that they built a sewer plant in 2008, which the cost was 20 million rand. But they got a regional bulk infrastructure grant. But their portion they couldn't pay. Today it's still not finished. Now it's costing 45 million to complete the project. So you know, I think we need to go and look how government relates to the grants. Municipalities at the moment don't have money to give their portion, and if they can't put their portion on the table, they lose the grant. And I think that's something that needs to be revisited as well.
You know, when it starts off with a sentence, you know, that begins to say, I disagree with you. You are immediately inviting a dialogue. And I'm not sure if we are able to sustain that dialogue in meetings of this nature. Perhaps it would have made a lot more sense, rather. I share a different view, and the view is expressed. Rather than having to speak directly to any specific individual. I think we've had a very interesting discussion thus far. To an extent that views expressed here, they take accord. It started off, first the main object has always been, when we started this process some 3 weeks or so ago, let's engage in this public discourse on vandalism and theft of our infrastructure. And clearly here, you have a number of people who have an interest in water. They're going to come in different forms, like Circle has done. You know, may have been an interest from a specific area, obviously, probably ESCOM has not had a chance of coming to your for the committee. Perhaps this then became that opportunity, and there is no crime in that. And similarly with the COSATU, I guess these are the areas that interest society in general. For whatever reason, different constituencies you represent. But what transpired quite clearly is that we have done two things at the same time, not three. We have been able to, I'm sure members shall make their own inputs in this instance. The first thing that we did do was to do exactly what we came here for. Where in presentations were submitted and that deal with the matters at hand. To an extent that we were able to go overboard, if you like. Because when you talk about theft, you're talking about security. And what do you do with security? This is number two. You cannot say much in a public platform about what you are going to do, what your strategies are going to be like. You cannot say much. Your hands are a little bit tight. Now the line is very thin there, and then of course we ended up finding ourselves having to open up for other interest areas. We've heard what Sasola has said, and we also heard what COSATU has said. And clearly here the agendas are very straightforward. They are about the consequences. And again, what we had come here for in May was more about how best do we look into and resolve problems related to theft of our infrastructure and also damages or vandalism of our infrastructure. There are very big debates going on currently in the country. The cabinet has got what is called interministerial task team that has got a whole range of recommendations, included among others, is to have one-stop shop in really getting to say, legislatively speaking, this is the direction we will be heading. That's what the government is seeking to achieve. It is not going to be business as usual for a scrap metal company. I'm also tempted, members, one of the points that was raised by COSATU, that as we do our oversight work, we also target one of those scrap metal companies. Unannounced visits are always best. I like the point raised by Sasol that targets water losses. Again, this is income. This is revenue that is not budgeted for. What do you do? And how do you do it? Because as we speak currently, there is no clear cut strategy as dealing with those water losses. And you hear talking of somewhere in the region about 37% of those water losses. That amounts to how much again, per annum? 7.2 billion. Once there is that situation, you are also dealing with the situation that we have made mention of, that we are dealing here, that of theft of copper and also, which again also adds up. Now you have here a major challenge, especially the municipalities, wherein they have to replace that infrastructure. Whether it is transport, whether it is water, whether it is electricity, replacement of such. But equally important is what the COPSA minister has put up. Each municipality having to come up with its own 10-year plan out of its own budget. So that you are looking into maintenance in a big way. without that, we can talk forever and blame anybody among ourselves. But if that maintenance, it's like driving your own car. If you don't maintain it, you will not be able to sustain driving that car for added years. It will certainly not even able to talk about your own car, about your own self as a human being. If you don't maintain yourself, you will die young. Simple put as such. And it has happened, and it happens, and we have all our own experiences, whether as family or as friends or as colleagues. And we tell stories after the fact. Members, those are the few comments that I could make. I don't know how much. Of course, there were other issues that were directed to the department. I don't know whether Ms. Singh or Ms. Mathe, you would have any comments to make.
No, thank you, Chair. I wish to commend the committee for having this important engagement in terms of receiving inputs from stakeholders about how we deal with the ever serious problem of theft and vandalism of our infrastructure. We've received very valuable inputs, very diverse inputs, and I think it deepens the conversation that we have to have about this. The department, in fact, the minister has been quite clear in her pronouncement that what needs to happen is that this theft of this copper and other materials need to be regarded as not just petty theft, but rather dealt with more seriously in terms of being economic offences. But the all of the inputs will be carefully considered by the department and we take them on board for consideration. In terms of the issue of the pricing and the tariffs, you will recall, Chair, that the department did brief this committee earlier this year on the pricing, draft pricing strategy. Of concern in that meeting was raised that the high levels of the tariffs, the municipal tariffs, and I think that is a serious concern for the department, and we will look to engage with SELGA and local government and municipalities on it. The issue of affordability is at the heart of this conversation. So I think, Chair, from my outside, I will hand over to my colleague, Ms. Mata, if she has got any inputs from her side. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I think on our side, the comments that we got was primarily from SELGA. We have discussed during lunch that we will have to make sure that we touch base so that we can have an integrated security plan that will also cut across the whole value chain, right up to municipalities. I think what is coming out interestingly from COSAR2 is the issue of an integrated plan where you integrate the water and energy plan. That also will be taken care of. I think it's a good idea. We are busy working now on as water on a national master plan. I think it's a good idea that perhaps while thinking about it, we also think about how to then link it up with energy. But the other colleagues, they came with strategies. We're already working with them, especially the water conservation and demand management. But also, we may, Chair, look at the issue of security in terms of the theft and what. I think Sasol came out with a very interesting report about water losses. Much as they may not be security threat per se in terms of the way we are looking at it today, but I think the issue of water losses, leaking pipes in municipalities, old AC pipes that we need to replace, really it should be taking priority in the national agenda of water. We are trying as infrastructure to elevate it to that level, that perhaps the country should take stock of the existing infrastructure in terms of making sure that it's properly managed, and also the fact that whilst we are complaining about water shortages in the country, we also need to make sure that we deal with the issue of the water leaks. Because, and in most cases, the water leaks is clean water, very expensive water. There is a drive that is beginning to take momentum in the department, which is called water conservation and demand management, and a program that is also aimed at developing youth. In most of the projects that we are busy with in municipalities, the one where we're declaring war on leaks, and also in the process training young entrepreneurs in plumbing, in municipal plumbing skills. I think that project, if we can also perhaps be following up on it, it is one of the very strategic projects that the department may make serious inroads in making sure that water losses are kept. Thank you very much, Chair. But we are open for any discussions after the session if there is a need for a further engagement. The department is more than welcome to be approached for that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we all agree in this hearing, and there's an issue that has been raised about the municipalities with regard to water losses as a result of one issue or the other, the leakages and so on and so on. And we also agree in this hearing that municipalities do not necessarily have enough funds to deal with all the challenges that we're talking about. But we want to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee the issue that we have raised and will continue to raise the issue. We have raised this issue with the department sometimes long ago with regard to the aging infrastructure vis-à-vis the whole question of the refurbishment grants. And we have said that the grant that is given to municipalities to deal with the refurbishment of the aging infrastructure is not enough. And it's an issue that, if not given attention, even if we were to come after 2 years to discuss the very same topic that we're discussing today, you might find that there hasn't been any solution to this particular issue. And then we'd want a situation where the portfolio committee assists in advocating for more funding with regard to refurbishment, so that we're able to deal with the aging infrastructure. The reports that we are getting from municipalities that we find that some of the infrastructures that are on the ground are as old as 50 years. Some of the parts are old as more than 50 years old. And for municipalities to be able to replace those pipes and put new pipes on the ground, it requires a lot of money. When the Section 78 process was undertaken by the department, transferring schemes from the department to municipalities, we have raised an issue with the department to say that you are transferring schemes to municipalities that are very old. And at the same time, you're not providing funding to municipalities for municipalities to be able to replace those old infrastructure and be able to actually ensure that you deal with the whole question of refurbishment. So we're making an appeal to the portfolio committee that you must make a consideration of this particular issue. We've made submissions in the past on some of the issues, but this is one specific issue that we making an appeal on.
I cannot disagree with you on that. We have discussed this in the portfolio committee at large, that MIC funds should be, the upgrade of old infrastructure should be included in the MIC funds. So that MIC funds should not only be used for new infrastructure. Eventually, government will save much more money assisting municipalities to get those old infrastructures renewed. Because as you say, is that prices are not, is no longer determined, electricity prices and water prices no longer determined by municipalities. NASA determines what the municipality should ask for electricity, so the income.
is getting smaller and smaller for municipalities, and the areas are getting larger. There's more people that cannot pay. So I agree with you, and we got the indication from the minister of COCTA that they were looking into it, because we have asked questions about it, and sooner than later we will maybe get that that going. So from our side, I think we support that that should happen.
Thanks, Chair. excuse me. Just a couple of points, and I know the debate is now diverted to other things, which is good. Chair, we'll probably want to be given an opportunity at some point, because we've got some good initiatives that are happening out there, trying to cap water losses, looking at pricing, looking at tariffing, so, and as I've indicated earlier on, looking at this whole grant system, it's been re-engineered, and going forward, I can assure you it's a game changer. And we'll probably want to come share with you what the trajectory is going forward. And maybe lastly, Chair, we would want to express a different view on the basis of what COSATU has said on two fronts. Firstly, about the tariffs being high. I think there are subsidies in place to look at or to look after the poor, firstly. But secondly, I am not aware of any water being privatized in this country. And that's the view that I want to express differently. I think government is still in charge, but maybe it's for another debate. Thanks.
Remember, those are the ideas expressed by the four presenters. In addition to those, we have the submissions. I know there is an organization called ECASI that sent us some message for us to go through. I know there is another organization, but we have a few of those. We have them with us. There is an item on the agenda here that says reflection on public hearings and concluding remarks. I'm not sure if members have any reflections to make, having listened and having engaged with all the four presentations. Could it be for some other time where we want to sit all by ourselves and decide as to how best we want to take this process forward? When I look, or rather see, you know, the head nodding, I get a yes. We find that, so that they don't listen to our comments, which is good at times. But what is also very clear, also for us members here, we are not the only people who have just started this process. We're not the first ones who have started being involved in water. What I do also pick up from a number of other stakeholders here is that there is work that was done before. I guess also that speaks to the department, other department officials. They probably have been there themselves during the times of Professor Kara Asma. They were there probably during the times of Mrs. Lindua Hendricks. Probably they were there during the times of Mrs. Biela Sonjika. Now, work has been done before. So we don't ever behave as if there is nothing that has done, that has happened before. And equally, there have been work done by other committees before us. So what I am mentioning here in a nutshell is that I think it becomes important for money that we have a sense of what transpired before, or what has happened before, and also what could have been shifted if major shifts before from one era to another, and where could those have been directed or keep directing us to? We have said something about oversight on those scrap metal companies. We've also said something about the water losses. It's quite an interesting one, I must say. I don't think it addresses the issue of privatization. I think far from it. More than anything else, it addresses, as far as I listen to it, an issue of budget constraints on the part of our municipality. And therefore you have a partner who comes in. Of course, those agreements will have to be clearly defined as to what are we doing here. If that you seem to be pursuing that already, you've budgeted 800 million already. I think in the main, those are the major issues. I had wanted to raise something else, which is quite a trivial matter. Mr. Singh, being the regulatory person, you know, I was listening, or rather watching the company ADS. You know, they have, and I don't know whether it does happen or it is done anyway. The company shall be presenting itself, and they shall be having their own logo and the logo of the department at the same time. Is that permissible? It's not.
It's not the practice, Chairperson. It has happened in the past, and we have now given instruction for that to be curtailed. If there is a partnership or an agreement between the service provider and the department, then the department will specifically permit for its logo to be put on correspondence. But it seems to be a rather unfortunate practice that the logo of the department is being used in many instances. So we have given instruction for that to be curtailed with immediate effect.
Well, the only issue you might wish to raise for the company concerned is that the credit perhaps could be that they were marketing themselves. Probably that could have been the major issue. That's why they are here, or they were here. It's allowed. It's a free country, I would imagine, for people to come and market themselves. There is an interministerial report that is still coming to the table, still at the cabinet level. It has very, very specific recommendations, taking a number of discussions forward. We hope and trust that we shall benefit out of that process, because that's what we want to address. We are not only here just to be talking alone. We are here looking for solutions. If we are able to find solutions elsewhere, that assists us going forward. I think there are a number of other areas that have been raised. Safe to say that one can safely say that we have managed to get somewhere, and it is work in progress. We are not concluded as yet. We shall be coming together. And what is also very clear is that the departments have to collaborate. COCTA and Department of Water and Sanitation, they have to come together. I think it's quite a matter of urgency. Having listened to the Minister of COCTA the other day in Boxburg at the summit, I think it's long overdue that the two departments come together and really synergize going forward. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense for the food department to work parallels other on key critical areas, especially related to what we are dealing with. I'm not too sure if there is any other thing else, members, at this juncture. I want to declare that this meeting is adjourned. Before we go there, sorry about that. Mr. Bacon, we are told that on Thursday we all must come back. And what we were trying to deal with Madia was whether to go on and be away on tomorrow as planned. Effectively, if it were to be such, it would mean having to come back, give or take, 10 o'clock morning of Thursday, which doesn't make sense. So clearly, Thursday's programs were meant to deal with the asset mine drainage situation, Mr. Singh, in Jameson and also West End on Thursday. So I would imagine that falls away. So which then leaves us only with your Madibank program, which is on Friday. We might have to leave early morning of Friday to catch on that program in Madibank. That should be it for now, and I guess this is going to be our last day on Friday until we meet next year in January. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much for your time.
Preventing wasteful expenditure. Rather, say, I'm in.